So let's jump back in. I know some of you might be floundering a little bit thinking, oh my gosh, that was a whiz-bang flyby of burp. That's our introduction to burp. You are going to be using burp and using those particular tools, and that's when you're really going to get a feel for why and when and how to use them. So we're giving you some exposure of what's possible in your interception proxy by looking at all those different pieces and parts of burp, but true understanding is going to be when you're wielding those particular tools and those particular portions of burp, right? When you see what the use cases are. So let's move in to some information gathering. We're necessarily going to be hitting web applications. These web applications, how do we actually hit them? How do we interface with them in the first place? And that's going to lead us into, well, who is in DNS? Who is information? We use the Who is protocol, which TCP 43, and there's an RFC number, right? Yay. But what we're looking at, this is more so a basic recon, but it's also associated with trying to figure out IP address ranges. So figuring out IP address ranges for the particular organization. The Who is information is going to, most importantly, and the reason we present it here, it's going to identify the authoritative name servers, right? The authoritative name servers for that domain. So it might give us some IP address information. We will get authoritative name servers for the domain, and that's going to lead directly into our DNS assessment. So here's some basic Who is information. You can use Whois clients from just the command line. You can also hit public-facing, web-based Whois that can collect, that can hit against, multiple registrars, multiple ISPs. Some of them, you can hit through one client. Some you will have to directly hit their particular registrar to get the information. But regardless, we can find this with little difficulty. And some info that could be useful. We do a Who is against SANS. SANS.org, what do we see? We get the registrant email, right? So that's not particularly useful. Okay, if we're going to do some client side, maybe this could be useful. That doesn't identify a particular user account. They often do, and if they do, then that email address might give you insight into what their username generation looks like. So if you see S Meisner, SK Meisner, then you get a sense of, hey, well, if I know what Seth Meisner's account looks like based on email, I have a pretty good guess as to what other usernames look like. So that could be something that's relevant from your Whois information. In this case, it's not terribly useful. Those are generic email accounts. But our most important piece here is we've got the authoritative name servers that are listed at the bottom. Okay, these are authoritative name servers. These are who we can interact with to figure out DNS info. Okay, this is who we're going to query. And this is who your browser automatically will interface with at some level, right? Your browser issues DNS request. That's going to go to DNS server that's defined for your particular network. It's going to say, hey, give me www.sans.org. Your local DNS server hasn't resolved this, hasn't cached it, doesn't know. Says, dude, I don't know. Then it's going to end up, either forwarding it and saying, passing it off to somebody else. But ultimately, we need to get to someone that's going to do a recursive lookup, which is going to inquiry an authoritative name servers to figure out, well, what is the other end? I need to know what the IP address associated with www.sans.org is. And that's where, of course, the DNS piece comes in. That query that I was just talking about, show me www.sans.org. That is the standard type of query. So we're looking for an A record. We're doing what's referred to as a forward lookup, which is I got a host name, you give me an IP address. I provide you the host name, you respond with an IP address. That query response is the query response portion of DNS we expect to be UDP based. There's some nuance here. there was the classic approach to DNS queries was that if the query or response was larger than 512 bytes, oh my gosh, that's so big. We need to use a reliable transport protocol. We're going to have to flip to TCP. Really? 512 bytes. That's lame. That's really lame. So that's classic old school. Anything larger, request a response that was larger than 512 bytes, you'd flip over to TCP as your transport protocol. That's lame, and it's way the heck too much overhead for something as critical as DNS query response. So we'd really like it to be UDP-based still, and that's what eDNS does, or extended DNS. It allows us to go bigger than 512 for our request response. One thing that has gone just totally nuts are the TLDs, the top-level domains. It used to be top-level domains. You got a little org, got a little com, maybe a little net, yeah? Maybe some country codes, co-UK. Yeah, okay, you had a few of them there. Now, oh, wow, things have gone just crazy, right? So you got the .guru domain, the .ninja domains, the .really? Yeah, it's just craziness. It's absolute insanity as far as the top-level domains. And it gets more insane every single year. And there's still a lot of talk about having just no restrictions on top-level domains, of having just totally arbitrary, anybody can choose whatever the heck they want. Wow, that'll be fun. but what is this, why do we care? Like, why do you care that there's a .ninja domain? All right, I'm just supposed to be testing sec542.org or sec542.com. Why do I care that there might be a sec542.ninja, a sec542.biz, a sec542.business, a sec542.gd, why do I care? Somebody might go there. Why else might I care? Could be a different version of the site, right? Maybe, hey, is there a .beta? Anybody know if there's a .beta TLD? If not, there is probably right now that I've said it. Now that I've said it, it just instantiated. It is existing in the universe, because that's the way TLDs seem to work today, right? So there's probably a .beta now, yeah? So maybe you deployed a sec542.beta or .dev, right? Who knows? Why not? And that's where you do your little soft opening. You put it out there for the pre-publication review, right? You throw it out there before it becomes official. This sort of stuff happens. You know, it could be a dev.sec542.org, but why not just have it be sec542.dev or sec542.beta or something else, right? That's an opportunity. You could have the organization have legitimate other applications, another presence there that has a different configuration. Different configuration to us means potential for different vulnerabilities. You know, different versions of applications, different vulnerabilities, right? That's a potential issue. You, of course, could also have someone that's not the organization that's sitting there saying, yeah, I got you sec542 right here. Yeah, yeah, come on, it's fine. So it's somebody typo squatting, perhaps. Maybe they're typo squatting, they've registered a domain that seems a lot like the organization for phishing purposes, for them trying to say, hey, sorry, nope, this one's mine, and I'm only going to charge you $1 million to have something that looks just like your domain. And yeah, there have been court cases about it and all sorts of fun stuff. But you know, that could be, it's something of interest, isn't it? It's something that we might want to look into. But there's thousands of top-level domains now, which is kind of cumbersome. Yeah. So all these different top-level domains, but even if they don't use, you know, multiple different TLDs and none of them are registered, DNS can still be tremendously useful. So what would be awesome in the best easy case? Oh, yes, ma'am. .beer, okay. So yeah, really, you should deploy to .beer first anyway, right? That's just a given, yeah, because that's about the extent of the testing, right? Someone was clearly drunk when they were when they were building this site. So you throw it to the .beer domain just to own it. The best place. Nice. So, missed opportunity, right? .beta's got to be coming, right? It's got to be in the pipeline. Sure, it should be. From a DNS perspective, best of all possible cases for us is that they are lame and allow for DNS zone transfers. That's just freaking cute, right? you're in 2016, you allow for DNS zone transfers. Does that ever happen? Like, does that ever still happen in the modern world? Yeah, just we wish that it didn't, right? I mean, I guess it's good for us that people are so freaking lame, but it happens with some regularity that you find servers that are misconfigured that allow for zone transfers. What is a zone transfer? What is the purpose? Is a zone transfer evil? Is it bad? Is it legit? What's a zone transfer? Is this good, bad? Oh my gosh, ah! Okay, so it's a way of distributing our information. Okay, so that sounds like a good thing. Okay, what else? Multiple domains, it's good. Really multiple domain name servers, right? So DNS zone transfers exist for effectively doing some load balancing and redundancy in your DNS infrastructure, right? DNS goes down, goes kaput, nobody can resolve your name. Well, your application's just been denial of service. Does everybody appreciate that? All right, if no one can resolve your name, unless they have hit this in the past and it's still in their cache, yeah. Right, and the TTL hasn't expired, then you're gone. You don't exist anymore. So DNS is kind of critical, right, in order for people to be able to interface with your applications. So we want to make sure that there's redundancy here. And rather than doing, like, intentional network appliance, geo load balancing, hey, it's just built into DNS itself, this load balancing capability. And not necessarily the load balancing, but the redundancy capability. So you can have a primary DNS server, and this allows the zone transfers to allow you to replicate data to other DNS servers. So if the primary just goes, bleh, that was it falling over and dying, by the way. Bleh, that was the noise it made when it just fell over and went, you know, just fell out, right? Now you still have secondaries that have the accurate, legit information that can service your domain. So that's good. That's a good thing. So zone transfers, yay, we want them. But this is the entirety of your zone information. This is not just, hey, www is at this IP address. This is everything in your DNS infrastructure. Okay? Well, all of your DNS servers need this. Okay? Anyone that's responsible for this zone needs this. But does the world need this? You know, some of you are thinking, you know what, my public-facing DNS, it just doesn't really include anything that sketchy, right? It doesn't include anything that sensitive. Okay, I'd agree with that for the most part. I mean, yes, if you disallow zone transfers, can someone still get information? Can we still get information? Yes, and we'll see how, okay? But if I allow zone transfers for my public-facing DNS zone, are they going to really find out, oh my gosh, crazy sensitive information? Like, am I utterly compromised at that point? Let's hope not, okay? It might disclose where that dev beta site that you don't really want the world to know about is, right? Your little dirty laundry. But where it's particularly bad is if you've got internal zones replicated out there, right? You're not using split DNS, or someone is doing a zone transfer against your internal DNS infrastructure. Internal DNS infrastructure, it's much more sensitive. It's not speaking to vulnerabilities, but everyone uses meaningful naming conventions. Here, I got a guess for you. I bet your domain controller is some variation upon the theme of DC something. DC1, DC2, DC27. Oh my gosh, how did he know? Yeah, I just did a zone transfer right now. Right now. No, it's because we all use meaningful naming conventions. So if I see DC3, magic 8-ball, signs point to domain controller. Right, of course it does. Yeah, you see mail, you see web, you see EDI, you see, right, app server, you see applications called out by name. Hey, this is Exchange 2K3-1. Really? That's cute, right? Yeah? This is old busted WebSphere 2. Yeah? I mean, this we do this stuff, right? We do this stuff because it's helpful for administration, but it's also really helpful for me if I can get that information. Does everybody appreciate that? So zone transfer, it is legit. We just don't want the world to be able to do a zone transfer. We want our other DNS servers to allow for zone transfers. Zone transfers use TCP rather than UDP for the transfer. Okay, so it is DNS, but it uses TCP. One thing that you'll find a lot of is people limiting zone transfers just based on the transport protocol. So their firewall will block TCP 53. Their server will still allow zone transfers, but their firewall doesn't allow TCP 53. They think all is good with the world, but once we're anywhere in that DMZ, in that infrastructure, then we can initiate zone transfers. So just a heads up there. So let's say that zone transfers aren't available, which is common, right? It's commonly the case that zone transfers are not available. If zone transfers are available, we do this, we get all the information immediately. But zone transfer is not available. Is all hope lost? Yes, it already was. No. No, it's all hope is not lost. But we're going to now interrogate the DNS. We're going to interrogate the DNS. It's not going to be a, hey, go fish of give me all your everything, right? Go fish. You have to ask for something in particular. They tell you whether they have it. They give it back to you, right? So zone transfer is give me all your everything. Do you have splat? Right? Yes. Oh, my gosh, I do. Here it is. Yeah, and you give it all to me. No, no, no. What we have to do now is play for reals go fish. Hey, do you have any www? Hey, how about do you have any www2? Ooh, do you have any dev? Go fish. Aw. Do you have any mail? So I'm just going to iteratively step through and ask, do you have this? Do you have this? Do you have this? And I'm going to script this up. I'm going to make this happen pretty quickly. I'm not going to do this by hand because I'm lazy as a feature, not a bug, right? So we're going to talk about just doing that question, okay? Do that question over and over again. Another option is what's called reverse DNS scanning. Some folks still refer to this as inverse DNS scanning. Doesn't matter. We're going, rather than the traditional approach of, hey, does www exist? That's looking for an A record. We're rather going to say, hey, what host name is on the other end of, you know, 192.1, that's private, I know, but okay. I'm going to ask based on IP address. I'm going to say, hey, what's the host name for this? That's called a reverse lookup. That's what most people refer to this as. What we're asking for are PTR records, not A records. A is the forward lookup. PTR is a pointer record that will do the reverse here, right? You also can have CNAMEs, which are alias, right? Alias records. That's kind of another way of pointing, okay? But the classic PTR record is the reverse lookup. It's me asking for an IP address and you telling me a host name. Now, is that particularly common? Do you see a lot of PTR records? You're seeing more of them, right? You are seeing more of them. We used to use them just for kind of particular use cases. We'd use it associated with anti-spam, right? So that we'd say, hey, by the way, this IP address is actually this mail server. So if you see somebody saying that they're this mail server and they're not this, you know, we used to do things like that. That still exists. There are other services that expect pointer records to exist. You're also increasingly seeing this automatically exist with a lot of DNS infrastructure. In particular, if they have internal clients, right? You're seeing dynamic DNS where they add themselves to DNS automatically. So we are seeing more and more and more PTR records, especially on the inside, but you do see them on the outside as well. Right, so that's a different way of getting at the information. The go fish method that I talked about before. Hey, do you have www2? Do you have www3? Right, do you have web? Do you have dev? That go fish method we refer to, and this is not right. We refer to it as DNS brooding or DNS brute forcing. Now, I take issue with that because it is not brute forcing. We don't do a brute force. Brute force is I'm going to try everything possible. That's brute force, right? That's what we think of when we think of like password cracking, brute force. You're going to try every possible variation upon a theme. What we're actually doing with DNS is we're doing a dictionary attack or a word list. We feed it a word list, and then we say, hey, do you have www2? Do you have web? Do you have this? Do you have that? And we get a big long list of possible host names, and we ask for all of them. But it is a word list, it's a dictionary attack, not a brute force, okay? Yes, you could do a brute force, you totally could. All right, you could absolutely do a brute force. It's going to be just a couple more requests, though, right? A lot more, right? A lot higher volume. Now, this can be very, very useful. This can be very useful for finding some CNAMEs. This can be very useful for finding host names that aren't otherwise exposed. Okay, so let's look at tools that we can use for this. And we've got a big list of tools here. We've got some that are really unique to DNS, and then we've got others that are really more general purpose tools that can also be used for DNS purposes. So let's look at some of these key tools, and you're going to have a lab here in a second where you're going to use these tools as well. So first up is NSLookup. Yay, NSLookup. This is beautiful. This is beautiful in particular because it is built in by default on like everything in the universe. Everybody supports NSLookup. The command line is pretty similar across operating systems. Linux NSLookup is different than Windows NSLookup. It doesn't allow for zone transfers from the Linux space tool for most Linux variants. It's deprecated functionality. But the big win is that it's available for everything. And I'll tell you that even though I don't use NSLookup for a lot of DNS enumeration and configuration, I use NSLookup all the freaking time. In particular for testing for OS command injection capabilities. We'll talk about why NSLookup is vastly superior to ping for OS command injection, OS command execution testing, right? So I use NSLookup a lot, looking up myself, right? Looking up my own domain. But we can use NSLookup, just simple little command line, relatively quick and easy to script. It's available all over the place. It is not as featured complete, though, as Dig, which is another tool that's likely to be built in, but really it's likely to be built in on Unix and Linux-based operating systems. So, and that includes OS X. Windows does not natively have Dig. There is a Windows client that you can install for Dig, but it's not there by default. Okay. Dig is, to me, it's probably the best widely available tool. NSLookup is fine, but it's not as feature complete as something like Dig. Dig is fully featured. Dig, we can get lots and lots of data, lots and lots of details on any operating system that supports Dig. So from a syntax perspective, let's look at what Dig actually looks like from the command line. So these are the first, I believe this is the first, like real honest to goodness command lines that we've seen. Note that it's got a different font. Okay, you see how the second line has a different font than the first line? You see that dollar sign out front? You're going to see that in all of your labs, too. Please don't type the dollar sign. The dollar sign, it happens, I understand, right? Please don't type the dollar sign or the hash if it's a hash. This is an indicator of where you're supposed to type this. So that's an indicator that you're just doing this in a Linux terminal, right? So you don't type the dollar sign, that's where you type that command. But at the dollar sign, at the terminal, at the prompt, dig at the name server, and then what you want to look up at that name server, and then any options. So dig, you specify the name server, otherwise it will use the default that's set for that operating system, and then you tell it what you want to look up. So if we want to look up using 192.168.1.8, right, as our name server, dig at, what do we want to look up? sec542.org. T stands for type. What type of DNS record are you looking for? I'm looking for any of them. Yep, any of them. Okay, so give me any records that come back. Next, I'm looking for just MX records. Next, I'm trying a type of AXFR, which is an authoritative zone transfer. That's using Dig for attempting a zone transfer. It will either return the entirety of the zone and spit it out to you, or it will tell you that it failed, right? So it'll give you a clear indicator as to whether zone transfers are allowed for you or not. A simple little reverse is dig tacx, and then the IP address, and then this is looking for the version of bind. That's a quick dig for looking at bind version. Okay, so that's some use cases there. That's fine. I like Dig. I'm a fan. It's good to know how to use Dig. But if you want to do this on a larger scale, and you want to do things like the heavy pointer lookups and reverse lookups, if you want to do things like the DNS brute forcing, then you'd probably prefer to use other tools. So let's look at some other tools that really can easily do everything that we need it to. One is Nmap. I know you're thinking Nmap is a port scanner. Nmap hasn't been a port scanner in a lot of years. Nmap is a port scanner. Well, really, Nmap is a collection of NSE scripts that happens to also be a port scanner. Like, honestly, the latest and greatest version. Have you seen Nmap 7? Nmap 7, go check out the README. Nmap 7, they now say the NSE scripts are so capable that we're actually replacing some of the standard functionality provided by Nmap with their NSE equivalents because it's faster and better. They're suggesting that it might even come to pass that Nmap's port scanning capabilities will actually run and launch NSE scripts rather than the pure play Nmap engine. What? This seemed like a weirdo one-off. You're gonna allow what? What is Lua? Right? And it's not pronounced L-U-A, it's Lua, right? What's Lua? And now it's turned into, oh my gosh, there are so many NSE scripts. And I frequently use Nmap more for its NSE scripts than I do for its port scanning capabilities, right? Now, the NSE scripts, they go beyond port scanning. We're over here in the terminal, we're showing you all of the built-in scripts that begin with DNS. So DNS splat, right? Blacklist, brute force, cache snoop, checksum, look at that. I mean, there's tons of different things that it can do. Tons of different capabilities, and those are just the built-in ones. There are tons of one-off NSE scripts that are built and made available that you have to go and download yourself, right? I heavily use Nmap for a heck of a lot of my information gathering, and in particular, my configuration and enumeration tasks. It's fast, it's easy, and it's a one-stop shop. And all of these will store the output in the XML format. So I know it's XML, yay. But that's where you can get all the gory details. So anything that you run through these NSEs, you can slap into XML, and then that's able to be parsed, you know, with some ease, right? But you can see the data with possibly Zenmap, but maybe some other tools. Yes, sir?
I have a common question that I'll probably get asked with NSE scripts.
Yeah, so question is, are NSE scripts trustworthy? I got no clue, right? They try to self-identify as to how much harm they can provide. They're supposed to like self-categorize, but again, they're self-categorized. They're open source, they're published, they come out rapidly. One of the things that we like about them is if there's, you know, new issue that pops up, an NSE script gets developed pretty quickly for scanning that across a wide berth, which is nice. But are they trustworthy? I mean, the ones that come with NSE, they've had a number of eyes on them. So I'd say I think they're inherently a bit more trustworthy than the one-off scripts that you download from who knows where. But that being said, can they cause harm? Oh my gosh, even before NSE, Nmap was the tool that I used to cause the most harm to organizations unintentionally, right? I've taken down many, many, many organizations with nothing but Nmap, right? I've made ops floors go non-op, right? I've made just like, I've caused unannounced disaster recovery tests, right? Whoops, ha-ha, right? This is not a pen test, it's a DR test, yeah? See how that happened? Whoops. I caused a campus to lock down. Right, I locked down the entire campus because I took out their physical access control and they failed secure and none of the gates would open. So people couldn't get on premise, right? I also did that against a law library during during finals, right? So I took out the access control for the law library. I was real popular on campus that week, I tell you, right? The scariest one, though, I used to do a lot of stuff associated with physical access control, and I was the network security side of the physical security side of this organization that I did work with, and they were doing physical access control at prisons. Now, I'm going to tell you, I didn't want to be on site doing that scan, right? Because I've taken out some access control, and, you know, does it fail secure or does it fail open, right? When it's a matter of, like, egress and livelihood, most things are required by law to fail open to allow for people to get out in case of fire or disaster. So, you know, when I'm doing my little scan and knocking out the access control, I don't want to be on site, right? No offense, right? But I'm going to be like kicking it at home in my PJs, right? VPN'd into that site before I take out their access control, right? You can be there, my little, you know, electrical engineers, they can be up there jimmying with some wires. I'm going to be sitting in my home, right? I've caused tremendous damage with nothing but vanilla Nmap. NSE scripts, they can be intentionally much more damaging than Nmap itself. So, yeah, you can cause untold damage with Nmap. So absolutely to your second point, knowing what the tool does, knowing what the scripts do, you know, doing some basic vetting and testing, I think is worthwhile. And I'll tell you, the party line is, yes, of course, you have to do that. But in reality, I run many scripts that I've never run before, right, against clients. That's the real world, right? And now I'm recorded saying this, so that's good. but, I mean, let's just be honest, right? You say, oh, crap, Heartbleed outbreak. You download a Heartbleed NSE, right? They are really worried about public-facing exploitation, people getting the most sensitive of sensitive data, right? I'm going to run that not having tested it against a lot of sites before, right? I might have run it against one site. Hey, it didn't explode, so I guess it's okay, right? So unless smoke suddenly starts billowing out from a system, then it must be fine. So, yeah, it's a challenge with all of these tools, to be honest, right? You can break things with very legitimate tools. You can certainly break things with Nmap and NSEs. To your point, yeah, we should understand what they do. And I think it would behoove you to look in particular at the NSE scripts because a lot of them only work or work better when you pass them arguments. So we'll be doing one of those in the lab. So Nmap NSE, lots of fun stuff there. There's some NSE brute forcing, NSE for DNS zone transfers. DNS recon is a thing of beauty. This is a Python tool written by Carlos Perez, who goes by the handle Dark Operator, who is most well known for a lot of the Metasploit post-exploitation scripts that he's written. That's kind of his, you know, most significant claim to fame, I think. But DNS Recon, it's a one-off Python-based tool that is just, it's perfect. It is built for us. It's built for it's built for pen testing, not just app pen testing. But it's built for pen testing. It's got a lot of capability for doing recon, for finding other TLDs that might exist, for doing DNS brute forcing, for doing DNS reverse lookups, for doing, you know, that it has a really, really strong word list, couple thousand words strong, really strong word list for doing that dictionary attack called DNS brooting. So some really good capabilities here. And he has taken DNS recon functionality and turned them into largely Metasploit auxiliary modules. So he's taken, you know, DNS recon, which is Python based. He's, you know, then written these auxiliary modules for Metasploit. So you can do pretty much all of DNS recon's functionality directly from Metasploit. Now, I got ahead of myself. That's DNS recon output. Yay, there it is. But he's ported all of that functionality to Metasploit, as I said. So here are the paths to them. So DNS brute force, cache scraper, DNS info, reverse lookup, server record enum, right? So all those things are capabilities of DNS recon. Now, some of you might be scratching your head and saying, hey, wait a second. Why did you just show me like 17 different tools, right? It wasn't 17, right? Don't embellish, okay? It was just, you know, a couple shy of that, right? Why are you showing me so many freaking tools that do largely the same thing? To pad it, right? To increase my slide count. Yeah?
Yeah,
No, that works, right? Totally, right? Just tell them about some more tools, Seth, right? Oh, that works, but no. The reason is because Metasploit, I think, is very capable for app pen testers, but it's often overlooked by app pen testers. We think of it as net pen test, but it's got a lot of app testing capabilities. And in particular, if you're on kind of a pen test engagement that is not exclusively app pen test, then you're going to be in and out of Metasploit quite a bit. Metasploit's backend database is very, very helpful for bringing a lot of information together. We'll talk more about wielding Metasploit specifically for app testing on day 5. We'll talk about how to leverage, the built-in database functionality, how to bring other tools output into Metasploit, and to use it as kind of a single source for a lot of our testing capabilities, which is interesting. We're seeing more and more capabilities on Metasploit's front for app testing. Nmap DNS Recon, Nmap, like, I think you cannot overstate enough how important the NSE scripts are. Yes, the port scanning, great. Yeah, that's wonderful. You're going to do that. You need to know that. But the NSE scripts are where, to me, the real power lies. And that's why I use Nmap heavily. Because you're going to find there are scripts for a lot of what we do in our configuration testing, in our information gathering. There are Nmap NSE scripts that are built in for lots of that. So, being able to effectively use one tool for a lot of different tasks, I think is extremely worthwhile. But at the same time, a tool developed specifically for this task is generally going to be better. So DNS Recon, I think having some exposure to that is useful. So you're going to see that, maybe not to this extent. We talk about more tools in this than we do for a lot of other techniques, but there is much to be said for being able to wield multiple tools very, very effectively, right? Okay, so we've got our DNS harvesting exercise. Our first hands-on, if you haven't already, you do need to flip back to, I believe it's page 18 of your book, to get your VM set up, your Linux VM. We're going to be using every single day of this class. First 5 days, it's all hack yourself, right? We've got a bunch of kind of intentionally busted applications and flaws and things like that that are readily available that you're going to be attacking. And then on day 6, we're going to use that same VM, but we're going to be connecting over the network. So now we're doing DNS harvesting. The goal of the exercise is to figure out, how do you gain this information from a target? How do you get the information that you need, the DNS info that you need, from a target? And there's going to be some different scenarios. So we've got, in particular, you're tasked with identifying relevant DNS info from two different domains. We've got sec542.org and sec542.com. Okay, two different domains. So you're going to assess the DNS information and get DNS information from both of them. Your goal is to discover all DNS names, including CNAMEs, including things that are unpublished, right? Including things that are not, intended to be disseminated. So a little bit of logistics or administrivia. Not all of our labs will do this, but most of our labs will have multi-path, right? So there's multiple paths through them. So there's the no hints version, which is I stop on the slide that says, here is what you're responsible for doing. Go. Then if you scratch your head and say, but I don't know how to do that, right? Then you flip the page and we give you the step-by-step walkthrough with screenshots showing you everything and how to do it, right? So the intent is, hey, if you've got experience with these tools, if you've got exposure to these techniques, then we want you to do it on your own, right? We don't want you to be told exactly what to type and how to type it. Also, I think it makes the after you're back home or after you're done with the class, I think it makes the exercises be able to continue to be fresh, right? Most of you will go through it with the walkthrough, with the step-by-step, us showing you exactly how to do it, what to do, why to do it this way, right? Well, then after you've done this, you feel comfortable, then you can come back to the no hints version and try it again, right? And see if you're capable. See if you're capable of doing it without, you know, someone holding your hand and guiding you. So this is the no hints version, and this is where I'm going to stop the intro of the lab. And again, if you want hints, then you just flip this page, okay? So here's what you got to do. Use Dig against sec542.org and .com, and use Dig specifically to search for any, type of any, and then attempt a DNS zone transfer against both of those. Not saying that both of them will be successful, but do it against both of those domains. Next up, use the following DNS brute force tools to discover resolvable names. So there are things that are not disclosed that you don't know about yet from Dig. And you're going to use nmap with the DNS brute NSE script. And then you're going to also use DNS recon. You will get differing data, right? You'll get differing data here. Now this you're specifically doing against the sec542.com domain. Okay, sec542.com domain. You're going to use nmap with the DNS brute. You're going to use DNS recon. Last up, you're going to use Metasploit to do a reverse scan. Now, please understand, you do not need to use all different tools for each of these pieces. You can do a reverse scan with DNS recon. You can do a reverse scan. You can do a reverse scan with Dig. It'd just be more cumbersome. Okay. You can do this with other tools, but we want to make sure that you get exposure to all of these tools that we think are really relevant. Okay. So Metasploit, use the DNS reverse and hit 192.168.1.0/24. All right. Most importantly, if your VM's not working, if you can't get it up and running, please let me know and I'll help you out on that front. Any questions on what you're being tasked with doing in the lab? Everybody understand? Okay. And again, if you need the step-by-step walkthrough, just flip the page. Cool? We're of course looking at your DNS information. You were tasked with doing a few different things. We had you use Dig, right? So you're expected to use Dig against sec542.org and sec542.com. So, you know, Dig, right? And then what? Well, we said we were doing minus T any, okay? We know that the normal syntax is at a DNS server, but we could also let it use the default DNS server. So we can do this. All right, so dig sec542.org minus T any, so type of any. You get a lot of extra detail up top, but the answer section is particularly helpful, and really you're looking at the right-hand side most importantly. So this is the type of record, so I've got an A record here, you know, 192.168.1.8 for sec542. We also see it's NS2, NS1. We've got two different MX records here, okay? So we got some information. We can also do this against COM, all right? Not as much information, but not too far off. But then, more importantly, it said, hey, I want you to try a zone transfer. How's my font size for you guys in the back? Can everybody read that okay? Is that all right? Okay. Let me know if anything gets too tiny and you can't read it, then it's just pointless for you, right? So next up, we said, hey, try a zone transfer. That's just the way I roll for this. I don't know why. It works either way. But this is trying to do an AXFR authoritative zone transfer against sec542.org. And let's see if it's successful. That sure looks successful to me. We've got a lot of information here. Okay, a lot of information comes back. Now, one question that I got while y'all were doing the lab that I think is absolutely pertinent here is, okay, that's great. That's some good information. You're not going to use all that information yet, are you? Right? But you need to be mindful of this information. So just having it sitting here on a screen, not terribly helpful. So, you know, be mindful of how you're going to collect and reuse this information. It is extremely easy as a pen tester to overlook things just because you forgot about them, you forgot to dig into them. So you do need to be mindful of how you're going to keep up with this information. And information management is a particular challenge for us. especially when you're using one-off tools. That is one of the benefits of those big commercial pen testing suites, is that they are, you know, a single source for information. But when you need to step outside of them, that becomes a challenge, because how do you get data into them? We will talk about that in particular with Metasploit on day five, but one tool in this space to call out, and there's a number of tools in this kind of pen test management space. Dradis has long been a well-known tool, DRADIS. There's a free version. There's also a professional version that you have to pay for. Really, it does nothing new. It collects and integrates and understands many different security tools. It is built for pen testers. So you take output of these tools in a particular format, and then you let Dradis gobble it up. And there's many different tools in that space, some of which seem unmaintained. But Metasploit is another way Metasploit is another option. And we'll see how to use Metasploit's DB import to get a lot of different tools data into Metasploit's backend database. And that's another reason that I'm a big fan of using Nmap whenever I can, because Metasploit understands, and all tools understand Nmap. And they parse Nmap's XML output. So if you can get it in Nmap's XML, somebody else can read it and integrate that information, which is nice, right? DNS Recon, DIG, you know, that's plain text. Yes, you can parse it, but you'd have to build a parser specifically for this. If you're just parsing Nmap's XML, well, the script's output into XML. That's built into the script itself, is how it outputs in the XML. And so that's an option for us. So just a heads up there as other things to think about. So we got a number of different names that we were unaware of before. And that would be an example of the zone transfer being successful. Do we need to do anything else with sec542.org? Are we done? Do we have everything from sec542.org? Yes or no? What do you think? Have we tapped this resource entirely? What else do we need? From a DNS perspective, what else do we need? We get some header information, right? And I suppose we could dig into the bind version more directly, right? But as far as resources, as far as records, do we have all the records for sec542.org at this point? We do. Okay. What about PTR records? Is it still worthwhile to do PTR records? What do you think? Yes or no? Why? Why is it worthwhile? If we have all of the DNS records, why do we still need to do those reverse lookups? Because they might be in a different domain. Now, that's kind of a cheat, because I said sec542.org, right? And we've got all the information in that zone. That's our expectation. So really, we don't expect to learn anything new about sec542.org from a DNS record perspective. But we would still want to do PTR lookups for the range associated with this, because they might point somewhere else. They might have the, you know, after it comes out, sec542.beta, right? A sec542.dev. That might be one of their IP addresses might point there. And that could be worthwhile to know. Now, that's not specifically sec542.org, but it's still worthwhile to do those reverse lookups, even if you've got a zone transfer. All right, well, let's try the same thing. Up arrow, same thing. And let's hit sec542.com. Let's get that zone transfer. Oh, wah, 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 right? That's the sad music on Price is Right, for those that are not as weird about pop culture. So transfer failed. All hope is now lost. We are totally hosed, aren't we? All right, so what do we got now? We need to do some techniques. What techniques are we going to wield? Brute forcing, which is really, you know, badly named. We need to do brute forcing, but we need to do it as a dictionary attack, a word list. So, nmap, we can use nmap for this. Script equal what? DNS.brute, maybe? Survey says? DNS.brute? Oh, dash brute. Ooh, underscore brute, dash brute, yeah? Oh, no tab complete on that, unfortunately. Right? Wouldn't that be lovely? Just a heads up, because I routinely forget these names. The quick way of figuring this out, You need to find where the NSEs are. So locate.nse, and this will tell you where Nmap's NSE scripts are located. So they're in user local share Nmap scripts. That varies from distro to distro, right, where it installs those things. But this is where they all are. So, you know, I can ls, okay, user local share Nmap scripts, okay. I can ls for DNS, right, and I can tab it, right, okay. There we go. That's all my DNS. Okay, so it is DNS-brute, okay? So DNS-brute, oh, really? You're not going to automatically paste that? Bad terminal. Okay, so we can look at the script itself. Even shift-insert, that's painful. That's just painful, okay? So we can look at the script itself, and I did less against the script. It tells you the usage down here. So it says, hey, nmap dash dash script space or equal DNS brute. You can also pass script args. Oh, that's nice. So you can give it, what are the args that you can give? They're right here. So in case you've never looked at an NSE script, these are very important things to look at are the at args. Okay. So args, DNS dash brute dot host list. This is how we give it a different word list. It's got one built in. The built in is right there, okay? But we can give it an alternate. So just a heads up. Shows us the expected output, then it will go in and tell us about the XML output. So there's other args that we can do, okay? So we've got nmap dash dash script equal DNS dash brute. And we wanna do this against who? sec542.com, right? Because .org, we already got that, okay? So is that good enough? Yeah, it looked nice, look. So the pipe is an indicator that it's output from a script. That's classic nmap, nmap output. This is the regular old port scanner. This is the script, right? The pipe at the beginning of it says that it's associated with a script. So which script? DNS brute. And this is what it found, test, NS1, mail, www, and FTP. Nice, okay? So that looks good. I'm gonna send that to /temp/nmap_DNS, okay? I'm just gonna take that output, send it there. Okay. So now I need DNS recon, okay? DNS recon.py, type of BRT, what? That's brute. Okay. Then I need to tell it who I'm actually hitting. Nope. TACD, sec542.com. And then I need to pass it my word list, which is opt DNS recon name list. Okay. So the type of DNS recon we're doing is brute, the domain we're hitting, and then there's my word list. So what do we get as the output? Okay. Okay, not the exact same formatting of the output that we've got here. Is that the exact same information? No. Okay, so we've got some CNAMEs and some A records. We've got FTP, we've got mail, we've got NS1, we got test, we got www. So let's cat my temp and whatever did I call it? Nmap DNS maybe, all right. Let's check that out. We've got test NS1 mail www FTP. Scrolling back up, I got www, I got test, I got NS1 mail FTP. And then there's this one, CUST42. Wait a second, it's different, right? Why is it different? Why was one brute force better than the other brute force? They're fundamentally dependent upon their word list. So CUST42 exists in DNS Recon's word list. It does not exist in Nmap's word list. So we had, let's do, okay. So going back to my less, okay. Remember our script args here? Okay, this is DNS brute script args, all right? So let's do this. Let's copy this bad boy. And this one is a little bit, well, that's doing it differently, okay? I don't want all that. Let me just go this far, okay? I want to give it a different host list. I want to give it a different word list. Now, the word list in question here, the word list that's used by Nmap is this one, okay? So we're going to do a WC minus L against what I just copied. What is that going to do? Nothing. Oh, it's going to do absolutely nothing. So, locate SC. Okay. NSCLib, thanks. All right, so we need to give it to the path, right? User, local, share, nmap, and then NSCLib, okay? So we have to give it the path. It was doing relative paths, okay? So we've got 127 hits, that's it. That doesn't feel very brute, right? That's some weak forcing, right? That's not brute forcing, that's lame, yeah? That ain't strong. Let's see, what was DNS recons? Okay. So this was DNS recons list. $1,907. Oh, that's different. That's a little bit more brute, right? Feel a little stronger now. So, okay. Well, how do we do this with Nmap? Okay. So there we go. Here's my script DNS. This is what I ran. Now what do I need? I need to pass it an argument. So this is script-args equal. Now I've got to tell it what script I'm using. Brute dot, and then it was host list, I believe. Does that sound right? Host list. And then I need to give it the actual path. Let's see. No whammy, no whammy, no whammy. Huh? Host list. It's the host list. Thank you. Host list. Any other typo? Let's see. Wah, 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 wah. Survey says. No whammy, no whammy. Yay! What do we got? Cust 42 now pops up. I personally like this. It's cleaner. It's easier to read, isn't it? It's easier to read the output. And again, as I said before, beautiful thing about Nmap is if you slap a little, you do a little minus OX for output, then it's Nmap's XML output. And now any tool that you use to collect information from Nmap can now read that and have that data, have that visibility, which is a thing of beauty, right? So that's useful. All right, what else do we have? So we've got cust 42 was listed. Anything else we need? Oh yeah, we're going to use Metasploit. So we've got Metasploit. I already ran MSF console. Now we've got to use, what's the auxiliary? Auxiliary, gather, DNS, DNS, reverse, okay? Now, show options, and we see the options for this. This is a reverse, so it's expecting a range of IP addresses. So we're going to set the range, okay, tab complete again, and we give it 192.168, I'll make that, put that to the top, dot, is it zero? No, 1.0, or 1.anything, /24, okay? So we're looking at that anything that starts with .1, okay? And then we do, you can type run, but it's so much cooler to type exploit. So just type exploit. You feel cooler. You feel like, oh, I'm clearly a pen tester, right? So you can use run, right, if you're lame, right? No, I'm just kidding. It works either way. So we run exploit. Now it's doing those reverse lookups. And we've got a new one that we were unaware of. Yeah, a new one we were unaware of. Heart of Gold. That is the ship. That's the ship that Zaphod Beeblebrox steals in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I'm not sure if you're aware. There are pop cultural prerequisites to being a pen tester, you don't have to actually like any of it. You can utterly loathe the matrix, but you have to pretend to like it. It's a rule, right? You just like it's like you just gotta fake it. Be like, oh yeah, Neo was so cool, right? Lame. I'm just kidding. Neo was not lame, but still. No, there's pop cultural prerequisites. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy should absolutely be one. So Heart of Gold there, right? Get your geek cred on. So we didn't know about that one. Why didn't we know about that one? It wasn't on our list. We slap Heart of Gold, right? We append Heart of Gold to our list, right, over here. Okay, we append Heart of Gold in there. Then it should work. So echo Heart of Gold. Okay, let's see if this works now. No, it still failed. Heart of Gold. Let's see. Cat opt genus recon. I probably have a stray character in there. Survey says. Let's try that one. Okay, just kidding. It doesn't work at all, right? No, that's the technique. I've clearly got something going on with my append there. Probably have a stray character of some sort that it doesn't love. Troubleshooting, the way to troubleshoot would be what? How do you troubleshoot that? How I would troubleshoot is with Wireshark. I'd kick off Wireshark and see the DNS request going by and look for any weirdo characters that might have been appended or prepended into that request. So that's what I would do for sec542.com. All right, cool. I did it the next time. Oh no, I didn't. Thank you. N is getting rid of my new line. So survey says no whammy. Still fail. Oh, right. See, that's why you don't go off script in demos, right? It's just, it's a rule, right? You learned a valuable lesson today. It wasn't about DNS. No, but that's what I would do, and what I do is take data, take new host names that are valuable, that are beyond, that exceed the 2000. In particular, creating host names that are associated with your target, right? Your target is going to use, especially internally, variations upon their product names, upon their company names. They're gonna have like some their own little special sauce. So start slapping those into that word list for your DNS brooding, but also for other techniques that use word list style attacks. So we'll see a lot of that with different types of techniques and fuzzing. Cool. All right. Any questions? Yes, sir. Yeah. Question on the PTR. If you're doing a big net block that is not exclusively owned by this organization, let's say quite often what you'll find, if they're a smaller shop, you'll get the ISP's range rather than their range. You'll get shared hosting, and it's like everything that Amazon hosts. Yeah, that's not what we wanted. So a little bit of sanity checking is absolutely required here, and you will almost necessarily, in some cases, see other people's stuff that is totally unrelated, right? And that might be interesting, right? So shared services, it might be worthwhile to know, hey, wow, look at these other customers that are on this same, you know, hosted by the same organization. You know, maybe that's an alternate path into them. Maybe that's a service provider that's doing business with them. You know, it's worthwhile to think about those things. It's probably not relevant to our particular scenario of app pen testing, but it could be a worthwhile information. Cool? All right.